When I began working on my spiritual reflection, Robin Williams was still alive. And I must confess that his death and his unrelenting anguish continue to haunt me. For someone who ends their own life, the absence must feel enormous, all-encompassing. And that is not the only thing that is haunting me. How do we trust, living in this world at this time, that the very formidable silence is, in fact, filled with the presence of God? That God is the actual gravity which keeps us tethered to the planet and to our deepest self? The woman in Matthew's gospel today is a beautiful example for us. It is one of the very few times during the public life of Jesus when he seems to be inaccessible. This great healer, this deeply compassionate person, appears unmoved by the woman's plea, "My daughter is tormented by a demon." Notice the woman does not say, "My daughter has the flu," or "My daughter skinned her knee." No. She says quite clearly, "My daughter is tormented by a demon." The word torment implies intense feelings of suffering, acute mental or physical pain. But Jesus did not answer her at all. This is troubling, to be sure. And then the ever helpful apostles, in turn, say, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us. Thank you for your hospitality." Jesus does then speak, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." So, from silence to the dismissal of the apostles to the unambiguous statement of Jesus himself, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Who would persevere in such a hostile setting? A mother with a desperately sick child. I think of mothers the world over, in Gaza, Syria, the Congo, Afghanistan, Somalia, Iraq, Sudan, Nigeria. Here is a recent poem, "Prayer for the Nigerian Schoolgirls." "What can we do to protect our children? These young girls snatched from the nest of their school, a room full of sun and possibility, now plunged into seeming darkness, chaos, hell. Even the trees are trembling. The trees feel the injustice, the violence of it. All throughout the village, they shake with green indignation. What can we learn from the trees? What can we do to protect our children? These young girls snatched from the nest of their school, a room full of sun and possibility, now plunged into seeming darkness, chaos, hell. Even the trees are trembling. The trees feel the injustice, the violence of it. All throughout the village, they shake with green indignation. What can we learn from the trees?" Not only does the woman stay in the room, she kneels before Jesus, which is one of the ways we give praise. She shows her deep respect for this man in the face of immense rejection. She reverences him. Some translations even have her prostrating herself, a profound gesture of both submission and adoration. "Lord, help me." But Jesus answers, "It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." I've heard scripture scholars who are clearly uncomfortable with this exchange suggest that Jesus is being playful here, that he is gently teasing the woman. It has never landed that way for me. In fact, by now, I would be furious and most likely storming out of the room. But this woman does not move a muscle. In the earlier reading from the prophet Isaiah, we hear, "Look to the rock from which you were hewn, to the quarry from which you were dug." The strength of this woman must surely have come from the side of a mountain. She will not be swayed or distracted from her one task, saving the life of her daughter. Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. The poet Rumi says, your depression is connected to your insolence and refusal to praise. Your depression is connected to your insolence and refusal to praise. This woman continues to praise, to entreat, to implore, to pray. Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs. Her deep humility and yet her complete self-possession in front of Jesus. Several years ago, I heard the Dalai Lama speak at USF, where he was receiving an honorary doctorate. And the one thing he said, which so compelled me, was this: we need to be more like mothers in the world. We need to be more like mothers in the world. My academic friend who had accompanied me was rather scornful upon hearing this and commented that His Holiness had really said nothing. Or, I responded, he said everything. He said everything. There is another group of women hewn from the same quarry. They live in the small fishing town of Hamburg in South Africa. Many of them are grandmothers whose families have been ravaged by HIV/AIDS. Together, they created an eloquent piece of art, the Kaiskama altarpiece, modeled after a German Renaissance altarpiece which pictorialized deliverance from the plague. I saw this magnificent creation when it was on display at Grace Cathedral, and I wrote a poem about my experience called Presence. God is in the thread in the hand of this beautiful African woman. She pulls the thread through in memory of her husband, her son, her neighbor, herself. She pulls God through it all. God is in the thread in the hand of this beautiful African woman. She pulls the thread through in memory of her husband, her son, her neighbor, herself. She pulls God through it all. Some of what we do in what the poet Christian Wiman refers to as the volatile silence is stitch. We stitch, we sew, we suture what is torn back together. Again, the prophet Isaiah. For the heavens will vanish like smoke, the earth will wear out like a garment, and those who live on it will die like gnats. But my salvation will be forever, and my deliverance will never be ended. To make a piece of art in the face of overwhelming trauma is to give praise. Rilke says, the deepest experience of the creator is feminine, for it is experience of receiving and bearing. The deepest experience of the creator is feminine, for it is experience of receiving and bearing. And in one of Rilke's own poems, O tell us, poet, what you do, the poet simply says, I praise. I praise. In the New Yorker issue commemorating the events of September 11th, the magazine concluded with a poem by Adam Zagajewski entitled, Try to Praise the Mutilated World. Remember June's long days and wild strawberries, drops of wine, the dew, the nettles that methodically overgrow the abandoned homesteads of exiles. You must praise the mutilated world. You watch the stylish yachts and ships. One of them had a long trip ahead of it while salty oblivion awaited others. You've seen the refugees heading nowhere. You've heard the executioner sing joyfully. You should praise the mutilated world. Remember the moments when we were together in a white room and the curtain fluttered? Return in thought to the concert where music flared. You gathered acorns in the park in autumn, and leaves eddied over the earth's scars. Praise the mutilated world. And the gray feather a thrush lost, and the gentle light that strays and vanishes and returns. Praise the mutilated world and the gray feather a thrush lost, and the gentle light that strays and vanishes and returns. Perhaps what saves us or someone we love is ultimately very small. A feather, a leaf, a scrap from under the table, a long strand of thread holding hundreds of squares of fabric intact. Perhaps it is training our eye to see not where God is absent, but where God is hidden. So let me conclude with one final poem called Delphinium. Who says the delphinium is not sacred, or the star that floats in the center of a persimmon, or the indescribable turquoise sea dashing her beauty against the rocks? The ongoing reconciliation in the universe, nature the great teacher, spinning ordinary light into gold, the spectacular tucked into the common everywhere. This is the way of the sacred. This is the lively prayer to be awake. This is the only confession. Forgive me for not seeing, not hearing, not recognizing your presence in every living thing. Sing praise. Sing the evocative song that angels chant over and over in the center of the earth, their rose hips swaying. Sing the sacred song without ceasing. Blessed be.